Shiura Moretti, there's been a lot you've had to listen to and a lot that you need to process. So I'm going to try to do you a favor and condense the main ideas that we want to share and that we want to speak about. I want to condense them as much as possible into our first couple of minutes. That's way if you get hot, if you get tired, if you want to take a little bit break before Maruz, make sure you get a good seat in the base medrash as we gather together the entire group in one room. And you want to make sure that you don't miss anything, you can leave a couple of minutes early and you can still have an idea to think about, an idea to reflect on, that I think will capture a lot of the things that we want to say. Whenever a person speaks publicly, whenever a person has the opportunity to address a very, very important crowd like this one right here tonight, so there are two almost conflicting goals that you could have. One goal would be to get up here, and there's a temptation, certainly a desire, to tell everybody in the room something that they do not know already. Tell you something that you've never heard before. Maybe it'll be a piece of information, maybe it'll be an idea, maybe it'll be a story, maybe it'll be a joke, but you'll hear something new. You'll hear something that you did not know before you arrived here tonight. In many ways, that's the ultimate goal. In many ways, that's what we are hoping for whenever we speak publicly. But in other ways, the exact opposite of that is even in a higher level of speaking. I want to try to not surprise you with anything, but I want to try to connect to a little bit of a deeper place and a little bit of some deeper thoughts that we may have about this summer and about our lives. And I want to try to tell you something that you are already aware of. You may not know that it comes from the sources that we'll quote in a moment. You may not be fully familiar with how to express the idea, but I want to tell you something that you have all been aware of for as long as you've had conscious thought. I want to share with you something that you will think about even when you do not know that you are thinking about it. There is a phrase that appears multiple times in Sefer Devarim, including in this week's Parsha, and in a number of the Parshios that we are going to read over the next couple of weeks. And almost every time it appears, there is a commentary by the name of the Netziv. He wrote a commentary on Chumash called the Hamek Davar. The Netziv, Rav Neftali Tzvi Yehuda mi Berlin. The Netziv asks the same question, and he provides the same answer. As a point of trivia, as a point of curiosity, the Netziv, one of the times he says this idea, I don't know of an earlier source for a mic drop. The Netziv makes his point and he says, end of discussion. The Netziv basically says, I have an idea, I will say it to you in a few words, and this is the end of the discussion. If you look it up in the Netziv, you'll see that he makes that very common. What's the phrase that the Netziv is picking up on? So I'll give you one example from next week's Parsha, from Parshas Veschanan. The Torah says as follows. The Torah says, B'chol ha-derech asher tzivah Hashem Elokeichem aschem teleichu. I'd like you to go in the way of the Torah in everything that you do. Choose wisely on a Friday morning in Yerushalayim. Choose carefully on a Saturday night in the five towns. Wherever you go and whatever you do, you should follow the ways of the Torah. Why should you do that? Why is it important to do any mitzvos? Why is it important to make good decisions? Leman tichyun. So that you shall live. It's important in order to live, that you make good decisions. And the Netziv, I'm paraphrasing here a little bit, the Netziv in all of the times, and there are at least a half dozen, where the Torah makes a similar phrase. One of them we all know from when we put the Torah away, that's coming up in this week's Parsha, V'atem hadvekim, you who cling to, you who stick to the ways of the Torah, chayim kulchem hayom. You're all alive today. Anybody who clings to the Torah is alive. Anybody who doesn't cling to the Torah is not as alive. This is obviously true about certain decisions that we make. If a person pushes the envelope, takes unnecessary health risks, whether it's in the time of a global pandemic, whether it's texting and driving, whether it's ignoring the speed limit, doing hard drugs, so certain bad decisions can result in an untimely demise. We have a certain degree of control over our own lives, over our own health. What we eat, how we drive, the way that we behave, will determine our health and ultimately our own survival. Most of the decisions that we make, especially the religious ones, are not life and death decisions. And the Netziv, perhaps more than you or I, cared passionately about the fact that people were going to take the Torah at its word, that the Torah is absolute truth. Why is the Torah exaggerating in such a dramatic, even melodramatic fashion? Why would the Torah describe these decisions? What you do on a Saturday night in the five towns? How you choose to behave on a Friday morning? Whether or not you have certain character on the courts of NCSY Kollel? Why would the Torah refer to that as a life and death decision? What's the Torah referring to when it says, V'atem ha-dveikim, you are the ones who cling to God? They're speaking about people who choose to be a little bit better behaved in the dormitory. People who choose to learn a few extra minutes in the Beis Medrash. That's important. It's not life and death. The Netziv writes explicitly, we know many, many people who live miserable religious existence. They make terrible decisions, and there is no correlation between those decisions and their life expectancy. To pretend otherwise is simply dishonest. There are many wonderful people who, we don't want to even say the words, they die young. There are many, many wonderful people who don't have healthy and long lives. And there are many miserable people who live out their years. The Torah could have used any phrase it wanted to use when it describes the importance of doing mitzvahs. Why does it have to say, leman tichyun, so that you shall live? It's simply not true. The Netziv does not spend a lot of time answering this question. And here's the point that, again, that from the first time we've had a conscious thought, we've been aware of the answer to the Netziv's question. The Netziv says straight out, the Netziv says explicitly, it is absolutely true that we do these mitzvos in order to live. Because from the moment we are born, we are at a crossroads of multiple lives that we are capable of living. This is where the Netziv drops the mic. This is where the Netziv says there's no response, there's nothing else to talk about. There is living, and there is living. There is a quality of life. There is a sense of animation, a sense of activity that defines us as people. We feel alive. We feel productive. We feel proud of ourselves that a person could achieve. Sure, your heart is beating. Sure, you're functioning. You are clinically alive regardless of how early you wake up in the morning, regardless of how you treat people in the dormitory. But there is life and there is life. There is an exalted level. There's a spring to our step, the Netziv writes. There's a way in which we are completely animated by our own soul, where we feel more alive than we have ever felt in our lives. We feel a sense of purpose. We feel a sense of direction. We feel a sense of goodness and of pride. You can't call that the same thing as another life. The Torah means what it says when the Torah says, Leman tichyun. When the Torah says, do the mitzvah so that you shall live, it means it literally. All we have to do is add one word, so that we really live. Sometimes we say this about things in the physical world. You haven't really lived until you've been to this restaurant. You haven't really lived till you've skied down this mountain. And there's some level of truth to that. What's life without that stake? What's life without that thrill of that unbelievable ski experience? There's some degree of truth to that. But if you believe in that, if you recognize that to be true, do you know how much more so it is true about the activation of the soul? Do you know how much more so it's true to say you have not really lived until you've listened to Rav Tursky speak about his grandfather? You have not really lived until you've watched Rav Schechter in the Beis Medrash. You haven't really lived until you've tried to figure out, you've tried to correct a midah, you've tried to figure out something in the secrets of our world, in the secrets of our universe. You committed yourself with it. You haven't lived until you've committed yourself with a chavrusa to finish three more lines of Gemara, to stay up a few more minutes later in the Beis Medrash, just trying to be a better version of ourselves. Our generation has a disease. Our generation will constantly, in the guise of entertaining us, in the guise of stimulating us, will do everything it can to convince us that we are not great. It will do everything it can to convince us that we have no place in tonight's Lel Iyun. We have no place in any of these discussions. Greatness is for somebody else. Greatness is for a different time. We are too stuck. We are too low. It's not for us. And our Torah screams out to us every minute of every day, Liman Tichyun. Grab life by the horns and dare to be a little bit greater. Imagine yourself in a different version, in a different state of mind. Imagine yourself achieving the highest levels possible of greatness. I don't know how many times, if we will ever want to ignore anything in our Jewish tradition. So there are two tricks that we can use, and if you ever use both of them, you're guaranteed not to understand it or think about it for one single moment in our lives. First of all, we say it a lot. The more times we say things, the fewer times we think about them. Think about all the things in davening that we say every day that we know by heart and ask, when's the last time we stopped to think about them? We've got an outside chance at the tefillos that we recite. Trivia questions. What's the bracha that you recite once a year? Or we have a special insertion in Shmon Esrei on Tisha B'Av. One of the answers to that question once a year. We've got an outside chance of paying attention to it. The other brachos of Shmon Esrei that we say 365 days a year minus Shabbos and three times a day minus Shabbos, we have no chance of thinking about them. But if you ever want to seal the deal, we just need to sing it a little bit also, like we do in benching. At the very end of benching, there is a line that it's crazy because not one person in this room has ever thought about this line, because if you did, you'd never be able to say it again. It might be the single craziest thing we ever say in davening. We say at the end of benching, Harachamon, God of mercy, and we require mercy for we're about to ask, Hu Yivarech, He should give us a blessing. Remember these words? Harachamon Hu Yivarech, there are many things that start the same way. Osanu, He should give the blessing to us. V'eskol Asher Lanu, they should give the bracha to us and all of the people around us, all the people that we know, all that is ours. Kimo shenisparchu avosenu, in the same way that you gave a bracha to our forefathers, in the same way you gave a bracha to those who came before us, Avraham, Yitzchak, v'Yaakov, the same way you gave a bracha to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, what's the bracha that we're speaking about? Bakol, mikol, kol. The bracha of absolutely everything. Why don't you, God, give us the same bracha that you gave to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, this bracha of absolutely everything in the universe? We want it all. We've finished with benching. We thank God for the food that we have. We've mentioned some other things like Bris Milah and Torah and Eretz Yisrael. And now we just have one tiny request at the end. God, we'd like everything. We asked for a couple of specifics. Now just give us that bracha you gave everything. And you know you could do it, God, because you gave it to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Why wouldn't you give it to us as well? We say those words explicitly. Now here's the trick. We don't think about this at all. I need some help from those who attend a lot of Shabbatons in NCSY or elsewhere. If you think about the ridiculous tunes that we use for these words, that dull how ridiculous it is, then you could imagine that we would never think about it, and we do never think about it. Kishmoshin Esparcho Avoseinu, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Bakol, Mikol, Kol. Think about what those words mean. It's a guarantee that we're never going to think about. We just chant out those names, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, as if that is in any way pertinent to the brachos that we're going to receive. Hey God, once upon a time you gave Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov some wonderful blessings. The wonderful blessing was Bakol, Mikol, Kol, it rise. He gave absolutely everything over to God. Why don't you shower some of that us upon us? Those are the words that we say, by the way. I'm not speculating. Cain, Yivarech, Osanu. You should also bless us in the same way. That is a false equation. That is a false equivalency. If you did it to them, why wouldn't you do it to us? Why wouldn't we be privy to the brachos of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? Is there a more ridiculous thing that we ask for in all of davening? Is there a more crazy kind of request that we make? Is there a more warped kind of logic that we ever use? And we say it with a weird song at the end of benching whenever we bench. Cain, Yivarech, Osanu. In the same way that you blessed Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, you should bless us as well. You walk around and there's a guy who's driving between the campuses, schlepping refrigerators and closets from place to place, and he has a nice new Toyota that he's driving around. and you would go over to Rabbi Israeli and say, this place stinks. Why don't I have a car? I need a car also. He has a car. Why shouldn't I have a car? Rabbi Israeli is not going to be moved by that question very much. He has a driver's license, for example. He has a job that requires him to have a car. Just because he has a car does not mean that you're supposed to have a car. There's never been an NCSYer with all of the things that we've wanted to have that we don't have on this program that we think we're entitled to legitimately so. I don't think there's ever been an NCSYer who's ever said, it stinks in this place that I don't have my own car. It stinks in this place that I have to walk onto my hockey game and I can't drive there. That's 10 times better than what we say over here. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov had the bracha of everything. Why don't we have that same bracha as well? Do you know what the implication of this is? Once again, it's not a long answer. It's a simple answer, but it's one that is so foreign to us. We have the audacity to say that we are not the descendants of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. We are not the inheritors of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. We are going to be Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. We are acknowledging and laying claim to a level of greatness that most of the world insists to us is far beyond us. And it isn't. Every time we bench, we say, why not us? Every time we bench, we say, perhaps we are Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. That's called the arrogance of Kedusha. That's called the self-confidence of aspiration, the belief in our own potential for greatness. We are not nothing. We are not weak. We are not small. We are blessed with a capacity beyond our imagination at times, but dare to dream for a moment, a capacity to be great. And as I said, the world insists to us that it is impossible. It's a very funny comedian who got himself into some trouble with his opinions about Israel, but he's still funny. He's also a little bit too profane from time to time. But a fellow by the name, I'm sure many of you have heard of him, by the name of John Oliver. And John Oliver just recently, he had a routine. He was talking about the wonders of the natural world. He was talking about how incredible so many of the animals are. He was speaking particularly about an octopus. He was speaking about other animals that are unbelievable in what they can do and what they can accomplish. The chameleon can change colors, and birds that can transform themselves in various mating rituals you've seen on planet Earth or on any other National Geographic specials. The mighty lion or elephant or even insects and fish, they're like mind-blowing. You went to the aquarium in Eilat and you could watch these things swimming around. And John Oliver does, in his very funny way, he does the following thought experiment. And this would be funny if it wasn't so painful for all of us. He said, imagine if there were aliens who came to this world and they went to the zoo to learn about this world. And this zoo is like every zoo you've ever gone to in your life. The Jerusalem Biblical Zoo, amazing place. Maybe it'll be a mini teal. The Bronx Zoo, San Diego Zoo, the greatest zoos of the world. This is like any other zoo with one difference. At the end of the zoo, there's one more exhibit. And that exhibit on behalf of the aliens is the human beings as well. Why are we different than the elephant or the tiger? We're also part of this show to explain to aliens what goes on planet Earth. Imagine the aliens when they get to us. We are the least, this is what John Oliver says, it's not altogether false. We are the least attractive. We are the least impressive species on the world. The aliens would be like, what does he do? What does a human being do? And the human being is sitting there, likely on his phone, playing a video game, you know, scratching himself a little bit, reaching for some chicken wings, having a conversation of no importance whatsoever, maybe even playing a game of basketball. And the aliens would be like, that's it? That's what human beings do? You're going to run back to see the peacock or to see the octopus, to see an electric eel or to see a parakeet. They'll run back to see something impressive. Where's the color? Where's the success? Where's the excellence? Where's the beauty? And we don't even know what the answer is to that question ourselves. We spend so much time hiding and disguising our own Selem Elokim, our own form of God. We spend so much time disguising our own capacity for greatness. We refuse to acknowledge it for even a moment because it scares us to death and sets a standard that we are afraid we cannot achieve. But we can achieve it. Cain Yivarech Osanu. Avram Avinu showed us the way. Avram Avinu set a standard for us that we can aspire to. And if he can do it, we can do it too. There's an old riddle that is given about a huge building. Maybe it's a church, maybe it's a shul, maybe it's a museum. And it has a challenge that is given to a bunch of people about how you change in this giant ceiling that's all the way up in the sky. How do you change the light bulbs in that ceiling? And all the engineers are trying to figure it out. All the engineers are trying to find a way, and one by one they give up. It's just a feat of engineering that is simply beyond their comprehension. It cannot be done, and it's impossible. And there's one fellow who stays longer than everybody else and works harder than everybody else. And everybody else goes to sleep, and this fellow is there for a night, and they come back the next day, and he's still there, and they go to sleep the next night, and he's still there. 2 or 3 days pass, and finally they come in one morning, and every light bulb has been changed, and they said, "How did you do it?" And he says, "It's not important how I did it. What's important is why I stayed here night after night." And of course, the answer to the riddle is, I stayed here night after night because if somebody put that light bulb up there in the first place, if the fixture made it up there in the first place, that meant it was possible. And it was just a question of how. That's what it means, Cain Yivarech Osanu, Avraham Yitzchak V'Yaakov. That's what it means, just like if Avram, it's not a crazy thing to say. It's not audacious. If they once walked the earth and they showed what a human being can do, then why not us? Doesn't make a difference what my background is. Doesn't make a difference what sins I did in June before I got here. Why don't I encounter a possibility for myself that is beyond my wildest imagination? If we're going to go on that journey together, if we're going to work on that kind of greatness, I want to make two of maybe 50 or 60. We don't have time for 50 or 60, so we're going to do two. I'm going to make two suggestions of how we define that greatness, how we begin to achieve it, and what greatness looks like. The first and the simplest, and I beg you to hear me out on this idea, the first is the notion that greatness is not achieved by monumental one-time events, but by the accumulation of a million little things done incredibly well. Do not try to skip steps. Try to do as many things, as small as they may be, try to do them in a great way. Try to ask yourself, not be caught up in the rat race of life, not be running from one thing to the next. What does a great phone call to my mom look like? What does a great interaction with a friend look like? What does a great meal or a great benching look like? And I'll give you an example of just that point in a moment. A quote that I love, that I heard very early on, attributed to many people, that the very definition of greatness and learning, one of the topics of Rav Schechter's year that you all should be at right now in the base measures, Rav Schechter speaking about how to achieve greatness and learning. One of the things that I heard that moved me greatly in my own journey in learning was that the definition of greatness and learning is not somebody who learns 24 hours in a day. It is someone who learns 60 minutes in an hour. You don't achieve greatness by breaking Guinness records. You achieve greatness in every 10-minute section. You achieve greatness in every chabura. You achieve greatness in every single shir. We have a crisis not just of our own confidence and imagination. We have, you may have heard, in our generation, we have a crisis of focus and a crisis of presence. We're never in a moment. We just accumulate thing after thing that we do on a mediocre level, and then we drown in our own mediocrity. We need to string together few moments of greatness, and then a few more, and then a few more. A great conversation, a great chavrusa, a great mincha. That's what we need to be able to do. We cannot wallow in our own mediocrity. I used to have some less healthy eating habits than I have right now. And one of the things that motivated me to change from an unhealthy eating lifestyle is that I would be at NCSY Shabbatones or other conventions or meetings, or even at a standard restaurant or cafeteria somewhere in my travels or somewhere here in Israel. And I would call up my wife, and my wife would say, "How's it going? It's going this. How's the meetings? The meetings are fine. How's the food?" And I would say, "You know what the food is? The food is an abundance of mediocrity. There's more mediocre baked ziti in front of me than it should exist in the entire planet, in the entire world. I have never seen such an abundance of highly mediocre food. And I hated it. I don't even know why I'm eating it. I don't enjoy it. I don't want it. It doesn't do anything for me. It's just there. I'm mediocre. The food is mediocre. It's a great shidduch and we have a good time together. But it's not a lifestyle. I don't like it at all. I don't want to do it anymore. And I stopped." You know what? It doesn't matter that much what our eating habits are, what our dietary habits are. You know how many times we have that experience in everything in life? Imagine picking up the phone, and it would be, unfortunately, for too many circumstances, including sometimes here on the great NCSY Kollel. How's it going? I am surrounded by an abundance of mediocrity. I'm surrounded by an abundance of shrugging shoulders. I'm surrounded by an abundance of video games and social media apps and things that sap us of our greatness. Everywhere I look, it's mediocrity. Everywhere I look, it's just people who are not living up to their own potential. That's debilitating. That's devastating for us. And no, that's not the experience that we have here this summer. We're surrounded with our peers, with our madrichim, with our rabbeim, with our Rosh Yeshiva. We're surrounded by greatness, some of us for the first times in our life. And it raises the bar for what we're capable. Kein yivarech osanu. That could be us. If they could do it. And I speak here especially about our madrichim, especially about the people that we relate to the most. If they can touch greatness, then why can't I? If they can reach for the rim, then why can't I? And the way we do it, like we said, don't wallow in mediocrity. String together enough little things that aren't little things that are truly great. I learned from the great Lavi Greenspan, and he is great. Anybody has an opportunity to hear the shiurim from him, he's in our base medrash for these 4 or 5 weeks. I was in yeshiva before he was blind. I was in yeshiva learning from the Musar Sefer that is Lavi Greenspan, before he had the troubles with health and before he lost his sight. He was actually my roommate, and he was also my Musar Chavrusa. And I was once benching in the Kerem B'Yavne Chadar Ochel. He and I learned right after lunch. And he came over to me and he asked me, he didn't realize I was in the middle of benching, and he asked me, "Are we learning in 5 minutes?" And I motioned to him, I basically played charades with him, because I was a religious guy. I was in the middle of benching, and I couldn't talk, so therefore I did charades with him. I pointed to my watch, I held on my finger 5 minutes, pointed to the base manager like that. He nodded his head, he went on. When I got to the base manager, she was sitting there waiting for me. And I could tell that something was wrong. He, you know, and we started to learn, but he wasn't really into it at all. I said, "Lavi, what's wrong? What's on your mind?" And he said, "I don't want to be a jerk. And I'm not your mashkiach. I'm not here to, you know, give you our time. I'm confused." I said, "What are you confused about?" I said, "If I would have come to you in the middle of Shemona Esrei, would you have played charades with me? Were you benching? I just wondered, what were you doing? Was that a mediocre benching? Or was that a great benching? That would a great bench. There's such a thing. There's such a thing in the world. There's such a thing in the world as a great version of us. And the way we achieve a great version of us is by having a great version of the things that we do. There's a great way to bench. And there's a mediocre way to bench. And the more we surround ourselves with mediocre people and mediocre things, the less likely we are to ever realize how great we are capable of being. How much we are capable of accomplishing. There is no limit to the examples we can give. I'll suffice with a few more. One that is all of 6 hours old, 7 hours old from earlier today. But many, many years ago, much more than 7 hours ago, I had the opportunity on NCSY Kollel. We were going to have an audience in Yerushalayim with Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel was an extraordinary Torah leader in the Mir Yeshiva. He was a shining example of everything we've been speaking about tonight. Godless Adam, what a great person could accomplish. He was physically very much debilitated. He had a very hard time and wouldn't take medication that would dull his sensitivities and dull his intellect. Rav Nachman Zvi Finkel walked with great, great difficulty. And I once had the opportunity to drive him from a few blocks from his house to a hall that we rented out for NCSY Kollel for him to speak to everybody. I could tell you three or four stories about the day. All of them are humorous. All of them paint me in a terrible light. And that's okay. I just want to tell you one story about Rav Nachman Zvi Finkel, though. And I always think about whether this story is actually an unbelievable story or it's not. I swear to you, it's an unbelievable story. Even though there are no miracles involved, even though there's no stopping of traffic or birds burning or anything else like that, it's just a story. But Rav Nachman Zvi Finkel, who needed to summon up all of his strength in order for him to move an inch and for him to fold himself and to get into the front seat of a car, was very, very difficult for him to do. He exerted all of his effort to swing his feet out and to begin to get out of the car after we got to our destination. But he stopped, he sighed, he put all of his energy back into the car, reached over to the driver's seat, put his hand on my hand, and he said, "Thank you very much for taking the time to give me a ride." And then he did the whole thing over again. Is that a story of an Adam Gadol? Yes, that's the story of an Adam Gadol. There's a great thank you. There's a mediocre thank you. Of course, there's no thank you at all. How many times do we make eye contact? Do you know there are books that you could write about the proper way to say thank you? You go to your friend's house for a Shabbos meal. You're spending time. You know, that's what it is. Mediocre thank you is thank you very much. I had a great, you know, say it like that. Perfunctory. You have to say it. It's the way we daven. It's the way we do anything else like that. But there are ways to do it. I really liked the green beans. That was really, really great. That chicken was delicious. Thank you for that. You must have worked very hard. Just a little bit of change that shows, and we'll get to this point in a second, that we care at all, that it matters to us even a little bit. There are greatness, the things, the way that we could do anything that we do. I wish I could show to this entire group. I wish we had a projector. It's on my phone right now. You can come look at it later. You know, we had President Ari Berman come speak to everybody. He spoke to the staff on this campus, and he spoke to the NCSYers and the staff on the South Campus. He was at a staff training where Schechter gave President Berman the kavod of being there. Do you know how Rav Schechter was acting when Rabbi Berman was speaking? He was sitting like he was in the army, straight up with direct focus and attention. The way in which nobody ever sits and listens to a shir, no matter who it is. Rav Schechter is a great listener when somebody is teaching Torah. He has the ability and the capacity. I just wrote as a caption to some of my friends here when I took the picture, Adam Gadol. A great person does small things in a great way. When's the last time we listened to anybody in a great way? When's the last time we benched in a great way? When's the best time we said, last time we said thank you in a great way? When's the last time we did any of those things in a great way? Far too long ago. And we get lost in our own and society's own mediocrity when we do that. One more idea or suggestion much quicker than the first. There's a word in the language which, it's not a terrible corruption. It's okay that we misunderstand this word from time to time. I mentioned this to the fellows on the North Campus in Ravtorsky's night shir just the other day. But the word is being thoughtful. When I say the word thoughtful, you think it means to be kind and nice to other people. But that's obviously not what the etymology is. The etymology is so simple. Thoughtful means to be full of thoughts. In order to be great, we need to be deliberate. In order to be great, we need to allow ourselves to think. You may like the basketball courts, you may admire the views. But the only thing in this campus that matters is the fact that it is open enough, wide enough, for you to take a walk by yourself or maybe with your closest friend and just to be able to think. You know what matters more than anything else on our path in pursuit of greatness? You say, I spent 6 weeks and I've never thought so much in my life. I have a headache. I'm thinking so much. I'm exercising my brain so much. I'm thinking all of the time. Great people are thoughtful people. We don't, again, run from one thing to the other without reflecting on them, without considering them, without developing our own opinions about them. We think about things. We allow ourselves the capacity of thought because it is that capacity of thought that makes us truly great. Sometimes when we take pictures, we're like, you have to get my good side. You have to get me from the right angle. the camera adds 20 pounds to my face, or any of those other things, they're all true, but it's also true in the spiritual realm. We have a good side to us. We have the DNA of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. We have the ability to be more than we are. There's a known fact that casinos and other places where people are likely to waste their time and squander their tzelem elokim, they don't have clocks and they don't have windows because they want people to get lost. I'm going to make a suggestion to the casino industry. I'm going to make a suggestion to the Mirage and to the Mandalay Bay, all of them. Make a suggestion to them. They can put in windows and they can put in clocks. They got to take out mirrors. Because heaven forbid, when you're sitting at that blackjack table, or you're playing poker with your friends, or you're spending another hour on a video game, or binge watch, heaven forbid you should catch a glimpse of yourself. Heaven forbid you should see yourself and see that mediocrity. And sense that loss of Tzelem Elokim. Do you know the way people glow after they have an interaction with our Rosh Yeshiva? Do you know the way that people sing and dance when we're standing at the Kotel and we feel our place and we sense our own greatness? That's the call to greatness that we can have. That's the point. And it's a choice. It's a choice that we make every single day. And as a society, we're not making the right choice. We've got to be the heroes. We've got to show people the way. We've got to show that there's something more. We've got to believe in our own greatness. We've got to believe in our own potential. We've got to catch images of ourselves, that picture of ourselves, and keep it close to ourselves, that time in which we were a little bit better, a little bit greater, a little bit more powerful, a little bit more impactful. I went to MTA for high school. There were 126 people in my class. It's a very, very large school. We were not spread out across the tri-state area. There were basically four or five high schools that almost every religious young man went to, and another four or five that the women went to, and some that were co-ed, of course. 125 guys in my grade. I was one of three from my elementary school out of that 125. The elementary school that I went to, its name doesn't matter. I loved it. I had a great time there. It was a little bit more religious than MTA. And I was extremely, extremely self-conscious about going to MTA and about fitting in. And I had one goal more than anything else. I could not have cared less about religion. I didn't even want to get into a good college. I wanted to have a good time. I wanted to have friends. And I wanted to fit in. Stop me if you think that's crazy or if you don't know what I'm talking about when I say that. As a goal or a desire, when you get to NCSY Kollel or you get to high school or you get to any social environment. I just wanted to fit in. I just wanted to be like everyone else. I remember my father asking me when I was in ninth grade why I was putting my hair a certain way or why I stopped wearing the same shirts that I had always been wearing and was wearing a slightly different kind of style. And I just said to my father, like we all do at a certain age, you wouldn't understand, Dad. It's just because this is what people are doing and this is what I'm going to do as well because I'm not going to be different. I'm not going to be that guy. When I was in the 10th grade, once a week we had a substitute teacher. Our Rebbe was the director of Judaic Studies in MTA. It's a fellow who is now the Rosh Yeshiva in Yishrei Lev, along with our own Rabbi Gordon. He's a huge Talmud Chacham by the name of Rabbi Shaya Greenwald. I wish I appreciated in 10th grade what a great teacher he was and what a great Talmud Chacham he was. But I didn't, and I didn't spend a lot of time paying attention. We weren't graded all that much on his day of the week. He happened to be good friends with a chavrusa of mine who was lucky. I was lucky enough to learn with him. That chavrusa of mine later on became my brother-in-law, Rabbi Kamenetsky, who's here in this Beis Medrash. I learned with Rabbi Kamenetsky when I was in MTA and he was in YU. I learned with Rabbi Kamenetsky one day a week. And one day I was late for that chavrusa because I almost always was. And Rabbi Kamenetsky was speaking to Rabbi Greenwald. And he said to Rabbi Greenwald, hey, you're doing that thing in MTA in 10th grade. How's it going? Rabbi Greenwald shrugged his shoulders. He said, it's going okay. And he said, I have a guy I learn with. He didn't know I was standing right behind him. I have a guy I learn with. Benefits. How's benefits? And I remember, and I Rabbi Greenwald is correct. He's a saint of a man. This is on me. It was the most accurate description of my life I had ever heard in my life. And it was so unbelievably hurtful. It was so unbelievably devastating for me to hear. Rabbi Greenwald shrugged his shoulders in the most nonchalant way. And he said, benefits? He's just like everybody else. He's just one of them. He's just like everybody else in 10th grade MTA. And simultaneously, I had two thoughts. One of them was, you did it. You made it. That's everything you ever wanted from the minute you walked into MTA. And nothing has ever hurt so much that you've ever hurt in your entire life. Drowning in that sense of mediocrity. Not recognizing our own ability to be a little bit different and to be a little bit better. And to recognize that ultimately the respect that others will give us, the admiration that they will have for us, is dependent on our ability to achieve that greatness. That realization to a lonely MTA 10th grader absolutely positively changed my life. And it has to change yours. You have to believe in your own greatness. You have to believe in your ability to be different. And you have to avoid society's temptation to drag us down in a world of mediocrity. In a world who says, if you don't show that there's an alternative, then we can all pretend that this is all that there is. You don't have to be that guy to rock the boat or to set the standard any higher than it's been set before. Gentlemen, dare to be different. Dare to be better. Dare to be great. Kein yivarech osanu. Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov showed us the way. They blazed a path that we are capable of following. Leman tichyun, in the words of the Netziv. Let's get ready to start living. Let's get ready to encounter a version of ourselves that is better than anything else we ever imagined and will give us the life, the sense of purpose, the sense of thrill and excitement, the sense of pleasure that only can come with genuine and true greatness. Thank you for listening. Let's daven an amazing, amazing Maariv, a tefillah and a hope in the